Hello, hello, listener, and welcome to this episode of the Mindful Eating Clinic podcast. So we're up to the mid-60s, I think. Lots of terrific mindful meets chats and also mindful moments that you may also have dipped in too. Today is one of those mindful meets chats, and I'm going to introduce you to, in a minute, the lovely Louise Miller. Say hello, Louise.
Hello, Louise.
Anyway, Louise is no, really, she is lovely, lovely Louise. And Louise describes herself as the genie for your genius, which is quite a tantalizing description, isn't it? So none of these kind of generic terms like productivity coach, mentor, none of that stuff. No. The genie for your genius. And we're going to explore that today and also understand what she does in her business and some really key, interesting, strong principles that you, as a listener, can take away and think about in terms of your own life and your own perspective on yourself. And then, of course, as with all the people that I interview, I don't like that word, that I chat with, that's better. An opportunity, of course, to pursue their work in your own way as well. So, the genie for your genius, I think you better start off by explaining to us what that means, Louise.
Thank you, Laurie. It's so lovely to be here. Thank you for having me. Sorry for being cheeky at the beginning.
Not at all. Carry on. We don't mind.
Yes, I am the genie for your genius, which basically means that I help ideas people to stop faffing and stop frittering away their time so that they can stay focused, get the important things done, and see tangible progress in their business. So the people that I work with are the genius. In this equation, they've got so many brilliant ideas and things they want to do in the world. They're doing brilliant work in the world. But quite often, those ideas stay stuck in their heads or in notebooks and don't make it out, make where they can make an impact on people's lives. So that's where I come in. So hence the genie for your genius. And yeah, I work with people one to one and I've got Make It Happen Club. And yeah, I love it.
So, is it a common symptom of people that have got very, I would call, busy, active brains? Well, actually, I have another word for it, don't I? Because we had a conversation about my head, which I described as a butterfly farm.
Yes. Yeah.
So, is it a common thing that people that have lots of thoughts, lots of ideas, lots of things in their mind find it difficult to land those ideas? And do you know kind of why that might be?
Yeah, I think there can be all kinds of different things going on. It is very common. I think people with a big vision that really want to make a huge impact and have lots that they want to share with the world do have all those ideas flying around. And, it can be very difficult to make a choice. I think that's a big problem for some people, is to actually choose which of those ideas they're going to run with, because it almost feels like choosing your favorite child in a way. Which is the one you're actually going to commit yourself to. And I think what I see quite often is people trying to do all of them or a lot of them all at the same time, which then means that nothing gets finished. Or they might be so overwhelmed by all of the options, they actually just get paralyzed and can't choose at all. And then they don't end up starting anything. Another more practical thing that can happen with people, particularly a lot of my clients who are more established in their businesses, they get really busy and they're having all of these ideas, but they're so busy taking care of their clients and doing all the one-to-one stuff, all the day-to-day stuff, should I say, all the marketing, all of that kind of stuff, that they struggle to find the time to devote to their ideas. So whatever it is that's going on, and it does vary, the result of that is the same, which is that these brilliant ideas that they want to be working on just don't happen. It kind of breaks my heart, really. Yeah.
Yes. And is it, and sometimes is that about confidence as well? I'm wondering, that we don't follow through on ideas because we're not convinced that they're going to be successful. And I'm wondering, and this is, I appreciate at least two or three questions at the same time. I'm wondering whether those kinds of people also like success, want success. And so sometimes one of the stopping blocks is the fact that they're not sure that it's going to materialize, so they don't pursue it.
Yeah, no, I think that is a big part of it as well. And there's perfectionism tied up in all of that as well, I think, isn't there? That we want things to be perfect. And they're very rarely are the minute that they're out in the world. Things need to be adjusted and changed as we get feedback. But yeah, that confidence and lack of confidence is definitely a big thing. And that's hard when you're on your own. You know, sometimes you need somebody to be reflecting back to you how fabulous you are to help give you the confidence. I think a lot of people expect to be able to do all of that on their own. And actually, I don't think we're wired that way necessarily. You know, it's great to say you need to feel the confidence inside and trust yourself. And yes, absolutely. But we do also need those cheerleaders around us sometimes, I think, who can remind us how fabulous we are, help us make that choice if necessary. And, you know, there's that whole cliche around, you know, you don't, how does it go? The whole thing around, you don't get confidence. You can't wait until you're confident before you take action. The confidence comes from taking the action.
Yes.
Because if you just sit there waiting for confidence to strike, it's not going to happen. It will only happen when you start taking those steps forward and realizing, actually that tiny step wasn't so bad. Let's take the next one. And the confidence kind of builds from there.
Yes, yes. And of course, it's about having the confidence to take that first step. So it's sort of, I mean, it's chicken egg scenario also, isn't it? A little bit.
It is. Yeah, I was going to say, I often talk about breaking that first step down so that it is so teeny and tiny that it almost feels ridiculous. You know, make it as small as possible to try and take some of that fear out of it, and then acknowledge the fact you took that step and celebrate yourself for taking it before you take the next one. And allowing yourself to celebrate.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, I was chatting to a client the other day who is quite at the early stages with me. And for her, the size of the issues that she's got, it feels like one big lump. And I just said to her, actually, I just want you to do this one thing. I think I was talking about it on a podcast, actually, a few weeks ago as well. Just do this one thing. And she was like, what is that? Is that all? Or aren't you going to give me some sort of massive project? I said, nope. No, just do this one thing so that we start to make little steps. I think in a podcast I did ages and ages ago when I first started my podcast, I think something like little steps to make giant leaps, you know, because all of those little steps add together, don't they?
Yeah. And I think the trouble is for a lot of us, we don't allow ourselves to acknowledge ourselves or celebrate what we've done until we reach the end, whatever the end is there even such a thing as the end, because we keep shifting and adjusting. But if we wait until that moment of success, whatever that success looks like, before we allow ourselves to feel good about the progress that we're making, it's hard. You know, you really do need to be, and I know it can sound really twee, but it really does help and it does work. And there's this statistic that I love that says that a brain in a positive state is 31% more productive than a brain in a stressed, neutral or negative state. So the more we can do to keep ourselves feeling good and positive about what we're doing by celebrating the teeny tiny things that are so tiny they feel ridiculous, actually the more action you will be able to take.
Yeah. Yes. And I was thinking while you were speaking just now about also when we're doing a lot, that there's a sense that sometimes people that are very driven and have got all these ideas think that they need to be doing something that's difficult. They think that they need to be doing something bigger than what they're doing. So rather than celebrating what they're good at and just kind of sticking there and doing it very well, there's always a right, okay, we can now do that. Okay, I'm now going to go on and do something else. I'm going to make this difficult for myself, because if it's not difficult, then I'm not really achieving anything.
Yes. Oh, there's so much in that, Laurie. I mean, I've been there. It took me a long time to realize that the stuff that comes easily and naturally to me is actually of value, and that it's perfectly okay to stay in that space. And there's nothing wrong with that. 100% agree. And why do we think life has to be difficult? You know, ease is one of my favorite words. Let's try and keep things as easeful as we possibly can. So There was another thought I had there and it's fallen out of my head. It will come back to me in a moment, but I 100% agree. You know, let's make it as easy as we can. Be okay with staying in our natural zone of genius, not feeling like we've got to be turning ourselves into somebody else in order to be successful.
Yes, yeah. And I know that that's something that you talk a lot about, which we're going to pick up on. But I think it also, just to close this off temporarily, it also comes back to that celebrating wins and strengths, doesn't it? Because if we don't stop and, or even acknowledge, if we don't stop and acknowledge what we're doing well, of course we're going to think that we need to keep doing other things, because we haven't actually processed the fact that what we're doing at that particular moment is okay, is enough. It's that big word, enough, isn't it? We don't sort of use that sufficiently.
Mm. Yeah.
So this work that you do, it's quite interesting because it's quite niche in terms of the kinds of people that you work with, which is quite unusual, I think. And so I'm quite interested in how and why you started the business and how you've ended up primarily targeting people who have got numerous butterflies in their head.
Yeah. So if we go right back to the beginning, when I've never known what I wanted to do when I grow up. So I was bouncing around after uni, kind of traveling a bit and temping, and I'd do a really good job somewhere and then they'd promote me and then I'd run away because I knew it wasn't what I wanted to be doing. And I kind of followed that pattern for a little while and eventually ended up staying in one place for long enough. I was promoted and I didn't run away because I actually really loved the job, but it became really stressful. Is that whole if you want something doing, give it to a busy person scenario. I was very good at what I did. I was relied on by a lot of people and it was very stressful. And I can remember so clearly having this light bulb moment. I was sitting at my desk and I needed a glass of water. So I stood up to go to the kitchen to get myself a drink. And this thought just popped into my head, which was, Louise, why are you always rushing to get everything done? And it sounds so simple, but it was the first time I'd ever really clocked that it didn't matter how hard I worked, how much I was rushing around, I was never going to be finished. There was never going to be an end point. My boss was never going to lean over and say, okay, Louise, you've done everything. Off you go. Go and have a holiday. That's not how the world works. So in that moment, I had that light bulb moment and realized that something needed to change. And I'll cut the long story short, but I did end up signed off with work-related stress and anxiety eventually, which was obviously horrible when I was in it, but the best thing that could have happened because it forced my hand in terms of getting me out of that situation. So I was then on this journey to discover, okay, so I want to do my own thing. I want to break the pattern of get a job, get promoted, run away. I want to do my own thing. Now, what on earth is that going to look like? Then I delved into this journey of discovery around what am I actually naturally good at and what could I build a business around? And then had a bit of a crisis. So what I wanted, this comes back to something we were talking about earlier. What I wanted to be able to do was something really creative. Something really exciting and vibrant and creative, because that's what I felt I should be doing. But the more self-investigation I did, the more I realized actually that's not my natural strength. My natural strength is being organized, being efficient, having a logical brain, you know, making order out of chaos, all of which to me at that time felt really, really dull, really boring. And I thought, how on earth am I going to make a successful business out of that? Because it's boring. Until I was down in London meeting up with some of the people I was on a course with at the time, and their eyes were lighting up when they were hearing me talk about what my natural strengths are, because they were the creative ideas people with, you know, the vibrant energy and the fizziness that I wanted to have. And I was envying them, they were envying me. And what I realized in that moment was that if I could bring what I do to what they're doing, I get to be around those people and soak in and, you know, their kind of vibe, which makes my work fun. And then they get the benefit of me and my brain on their business and on what they're doing so that they can actually make stuff happen. So it was kind of, yeah, stressful, but got me to where I am now. And, you know, again, when I realized that productivity is the thing that I can do really well and I can help other people with, that created a whole other existential crisis, because I don't want to buy into the whole thing around your self-worth is based around how much you've ticked off your to-do list or how productive you are, because I think that is so damaging, and that's what made me ill. So I then had to figure out how I help people get stuff done and be productive in a way that felt in integrity to me, which was a whole other thing. But eventually I landed on a definition of productivity that I do feel really good about, and that underpins everything that I do. And that is that, you know, the traditional sense of productivity is about cramming more and more doing into less and less time. And when I think about that, it makes me feel really constrained and panicky. I've got to get more done in less time. My definition is around doing what's important as efficiently as you can to create space for what you love. So it's not doing all the things, it's doing what's important, doing it as efficiently as you can to create space, not to fit in more doing. And that is what underpins everything that I'm doing now.
Brilliant. I like that. I really, really like that. Yes. My brain, my kind of devil's advocate brain, saying, how do we know what's really important?
Yes.
How long have we got?
This is, the work that I do, particularly with my one-to-one clients, always starts with vision. Because that is your guiding light. You know, what is it that you want your life to look like? And I don't just mean your vision in terms of what you want for your business, if you're a business owner. I mean, how do you want your life to be? How do you want to feel? All of that stuff that I'm sure you talk about with your clients as well. And then from there, you know, I know it's a cliche again, but from there you go vision, you go goals. What are the things I'm going to do to get me towards that vision? And really, when it comes to running a business, everything that you're doing should be aligned with that. Should be getting you closer to those goals, moving you closer to that vision. And everything else, you know, there's a question around, is this actually important? If you look at it in that context. So I think it's about taking the bigger picture view, reminding yourself what you're trying to achieve, and then assessing whether the things you are doing are impactful and are valuable in terms of moving you closer to that vision.
Yes. And I guess that might be about yourself, or it might be about other people, it might be about your life, you know, your wider life, I guess. And can that change also? What's important?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's really important to revisit these things, because some people will come up with a vision and then years will go by and they don't ever look at it again. And then they might come back to it and go, actually, that's not really what I want anymore. And because they haven't had that, gone through that process of thinking that through, the stuff that they're filling their days with, who knows where that's leading them. So, yeah, and I think that's why, you know, every time I meet with a client every single month, we will engage with their vision. I'll either read it out loud to them, or they will read it out loud to themselves, or, you know, for me to hear as well, because there's power in hearing it spoken and there's power in speaking it. And it's that connection every time. And every time I will say, does that still feel good? Does that still feel motivating? Are you still excited and energized by that? And we'll tweak it, and that's okay. And the same with the goals. If there's anything in there that doesn't feel motivating anymore, we change it. None of this stuff is set in stone, and changing it doesn't mean you've failed. It just means you have evolved and you're adjusting.
Exactly. I'm just trying to think about the whole butterfly analogy. Like, there's a kind of a chrysalis type, it's gonna, you know, come out this time thing, isn't there? That sense that of course it can move, of course it can shift. And actually there's something quite confident and intelligent, isn't there, about accepting that things are now different, that you feel or think differently in terms of how you want to impact the world and how you want to feel about the work that you're doing. I think that actually changes definitely as you get older. I mean, I have felt that in me. So my other work, my corporate training work, which I hardly do any of now, I got to a point where there were certain sectors that I really wanted to focus on and others that I found less and less connected with. And that because I was reducing my hours, I really wanted to spend time working in the third sector and, you know, as much as I could, or with companies that really had quite strong ethical values. And you know, and so I actually sacked a few clients and sacked a few associates because they were in a space that didn't, you know, resonate with me. So this magic wand, our little genie. What kinds of benefit do you think this approach and your approach brings, and what's important about what you do, would you say?
Yeah. So if you were just looking at it on the face of it, you could say, well, it's helping people get stuff done, which means they can grow their business. But actually, that's not it. That's part of it, sure. But for me, it's about helping someone understand that who they are is fine. There's nothing wrong with them. They are enough. They're not broken. Because what I see time and time again is people coming to me feeling a huge amount of shame because they haven't figured out how to be productive, particularly, successful business owners who've got to a certain point, but they still feel like they're flailing about and disorganized and a bit all over the place. And they think there's something wrong with them and they're really embarrassed. And actually, before I did this work, I was a VA, which means I saw behind the scenes of a huge amount of businesses. And pretty much every client I had would apologize for what was going on behind the scenes. And there's a huge amount of embarrassment around that. So, what I'm doing with people is helping them to see that there's nothing to be embarrassed about. Their zone of genius is having the ideas, being creative, having the passion and the oomph, and the energy to go out there and make this stuff happen. They can't be good at everything. We can't all be brilliant at everything. And it's okay if they struggle with this stuff. We just need to find a way that's going to work for them. And I will never, ever force one way of doing things on people because I know that's not how humans work. Everyone is different. So I've got a massive kind of toolkit under my belt where I can, get to know somebody really well and suggest ways of doing things that will actually work for them so that they will be able to get stuff done and they will feel in control and on top of things. But that sort of thing doesn't happen overnight. It's not a magic wand. It's experimentation and curiosity, knowing that we will get there. We will land on the thing. And I see people feel so much more confident. And just the relief of realizing that they don't have to figure it out on their own. There's nothing wrong with them. They can be in their zone of genius, have me help them figure out this other stuff, and then they'll be flying.
Yeah. And I think that's a really important thing to reinforce, isn't it? That we all have different strengths. I know that's bandied about all the time, but, and therefore, of course, you're not going to be amazing at everything. Of course, you're not. And it's okay that there are weaknesses. And it's okay also for someone like you to help sort it out. And to fill in the gap and to maybe create some mindset stroke practical changes in order to make that happen. And being the mindful eating clinic, we're not talking about eating. Well, we're not talking about eating yet. I don't know. We might, but we are talking about mind, I think. So my next question is, how much of it, maybe it's hard to say because everyone's different, but how much of it do you think is about mindset and how much of it is about practical tools?
It really does vary person to person, doesn't it? But a lot of it is mindset related. And I think a lot of it relates to that damaging definition of productivity that I just spoke about and the programming that many of us have growing up that you're not allowed to rest until you've done everything. And, that whole, if you do rest when you haven't done everything, you're lazy. And you can't go out to play until you've tidied your room, all of that stuff, which means people are not taking care of themselves and they're not giving themselves permission to step away. And that is actually the most damaging thing you can do for your productivity is to just keep going, even when you're tired and you're not being productive, but just to stay stuck at your laptop. So there's a lot of giving people permission to take a break and to rest and to make some decisions about what they're going to do and what they're not going to do. And that for a lot of people is a big mindset shift because people think that productivity is in the doing, and it absolutely isn't, in my view. Productivity is in what happens before you do the doing, which is taking a pause, reflecting, and making a choice. So there's that whole mindset thing around how do we actually think about productivity? And are you going to give yourself what you need, which is space and the pause and the reflection to actually get things done? So I think that's pretty common with everyone that I come across. And then there's the stuff we were talking about earlier around confidence and perfectionism and all of those things that creep in as well. And there is also the practical thing, you know, people, there's such a massive industry around helping people be more productive in terms of apps, planners, books, the latest guru who says that you've got to do it like this, you know, get up at 5 a.m., all of that. And honestly, it drives me mad. People,
that was a big sigh.
I know. People, it's understandable. People are feeling the pain of not being able to be organized and get stuff done. So of course they're going to reach out for whatever they think is going to work, but there is no magic bullet. There's no quick fix. So it really is about finding what works for you. So the practical steps are, again, vary from person to person based on who they are and what works for them. But yeah, it is very much a combination of the two. If somebody is at a point where their nervous system is so kind of jangly and they're really not in a good place, then I would direct them elsewhere because they need to get that sort of settled. If they're really in that fight or flight space, they probably need help from somewhere else before they come to me. But I can certainly identify other sort of mindset issues that need working on along with all the practical stuff as well. Yeah,
I've just got myself a new planner.
Have you?
Actually, at the moment, I quite like it, but I'm using it in quite a rebellious way, in that the day to day has, you know, hours for what's going on meeting wise. I'm not using it for that because I have a electronic calendar, but I'm using it as a to-do list. So I feel like it's kind of answering my need because I'm not using it the way it's supposed to be used. Does that make
sense?
There you
go. It does. Yeah, it does.
I have only had it 2 weeks, so I don't know whether this will last, you know, at all. I have no idea, but we'll see.
Well, and there's nothing wrong with that if it does work for you. I think where it becomes a problem is, and I see this quite a lot, people will start a system, they'll spend ages setting it up, they'll use it for a bit, then they get bored. So then off they go hunting for another system, which they'll spend ages setting up, and then they'll use it for a bit, and then they'll get bored. And all of that time when they're doing the setting things up and everything, it feels good because it feels like you're taking control of the situation, but you're not actually doing the thing that needs to be done in terms of getting your ideas moving forward. So there's that is where I think it starts to become a little bit problematic.
But I don't know how. Okay, this is turning into a one-to-one session. Listener, I'm so sorry. I don't know how to cope with that. You know, I'm really bored of that now. Or, oh, I bought that lovely, nice, shiny magnetic planner. It's on my board, and I don't quite know how to use it. So I've got it there. I've got all these lovely things. But yeah. Well, I guess I come to you, don't I? And I say, yeah. I've got all these tools. Which of them do I take to the charity shop? Which of them might help me? How can I work with them? Do I just need to start again from scratch? And I guess all that.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you find something and it works, then in theory, you shouldn't need to throw it out again and start again because it's working for you really well. And there's no longer a problem that needs to be solved by a new system. I mean, I know I always talk about there's no one size fits all, and I 100% believe that. But I do also have a course called Tame Your To-Do List, which teaches a really flexible system that you can shape to suit you. Mm. And I've got people who've done that course. In fact, I had a chat with someone recently who, she still gets seduced by the fancy spreadsheets and the things that other people in other group programs and stuff are using and sharing. And she makes a start on it, and then she catches herself when she's going, no, why am I doing this? I've got this system over here that Louise showed me that I know works. Stop it.
So I think it's magpie syndrome, isn't it?
Yeah. It's not, you know, I'm not wanting to make anyone feel bad if that's what they're doing. It's human nature. No.
Sure. And everyone's, well, I don't know, everyone. I mean, everyone, I think, is enticed and seduced by a sexy piece of new stationery. It's got these ribbons and it's got, oh, it's got stickers. Honestly, I'm like a 5-year-old with this planner. I mean, I absolutely love it. But it's the stickers. I went, look for the stick. I mean, honestly, it's just... Well,
and that's giving everything you joy, isn't it? I can see in your face that that's giving you joy, and that's not to be sniffed at either, is it?
Oh, no, I suppose not. Right, I'm gonna come on with you in about a month's time. I'm going to say, look at my planner, look how complete and great it is. But I suppose back to this sort of idea about pushing ourselves, if these systems that we're using aren't working, we can turn around and say, well, it's only not working because I'm not putting the right effort in. Can't
yeah.
We can say that to ourselves as well.
We can. And sometimes that might be the case, but most of the time it isn't. Most of the time it just means you haven't found what is right for you. And I know you and I have had a conversation about this already, so I'll just share it in case it's useful and of interest to your listeners. Gretchen Rubin has this thing called the Four Tendencies, and she's got a brilliant book on it. And there's a quiz also where you could go and take this quiz and it'll tell you which of the four tendencies you are. And it's this framework that's built around how we meet expectations. And we all have inner expectations and outer expectations. So the inner expectations, I'm sure a lot of your clients, you know, will resonate with this. It's around what you're doing for yourself when no one's looking. So exercising, eating well, all of that kind of stuff. Outer expectations are the things we do for other people. So the things you do for clients, showing up for them, stuff you've promised someone. And we all respond differently to inner and outer expectations. And the four tendencies that Gretchen has identified, is it all right if I just rattle through them really quickly, Laurie?
Yes, carry on. Yeah.
Okay, definitely. Awesome. So I love this. I could talk about this for ages, so I'll try not to. But there's the upholder, who is the person who does exactly what they say they're going to do. So they're the person who can put things in their diary and they will do it when their diary tells them they're going to do it. Then we've got obligers, which is me. We do things if there's somebody looking. So we need accountability. So even for our inner expectations, we need to find a way of getting accountability for those things if we're going to make them happen. So that's obligers. Then you've got questioners, who will only meet an expectation if they understand and agree with the reason why. So they need for it to be justified and they need to be on board with the reason why that thing needs to happen. And then you've got a rebel, who, as the name suggests, is basically going to rebel against any inner or outer expectations. And the motto that Gretchen Rubin has come up with for them is, you can't make me and neither can I. So that one is a bit of a challenge, but there is a way of working with it. So quite often, if you're using a system that is not effective for you, it's because it's not effective for your tendency. So a lot of the stuff out there for productivity is designed for obligers or upholders, actually. So, you know, lots of group programs and all that kind of thing have accountability attached to them, which is fantastic for the people for whom accountability works, i.e. me, obligers. But for a rebel, Laurie's putting a hand up, for a rebel or a questioner. The hand was going up for obliger, I should just clarify, not rebel.
No, but, even though I'm not using my planner in the right way, but that's because I'm not the first one. Who's the first one?
The upholder, yeah.
No, I'm not that. No.
Yeah. So where accountability is kind of talked about as the holy grail of productivity, that is true for a proportion of the population, but it's not true for everyone. So if you're in a program or something where there is accountability being offered and it's not working for you, it is very easy, as you said, Laurie, to think, well, what am I doing wrong? I must not be putting the effort in. Actually, that it's just that tactic isn't going to be effective for you. And the upholder, I'm working with a client at the moment who was sat down by coaches who told her she needed to map everything out into her diary. So she did. She knew it wasn't going to work, but she did it anyway. And true enough, it didn't work. And she wasted 2 hours of her life putting all of this stuff in her calendar, which she then completely ignored. So those coaches were upholders and didn't understand that not everybody works that way. This client is a questioner. So when I'm working with her, we're very heavy on the why is this important part of the conversation, so she can really feel that. And then that's her motivation to get it done. Yeah, so it's about finding what works for you and understanding what works for you and then finding the tactics that are going to suit that.
I think that's so interesting. And I think everyone's going, right, Gretchen Rubin, right, I'm going to try and find that because it's always so interesting, isn't it, to get a little bit more insight into ourselves, why we behave and respond certain things in a certain way. And this whole overarching point that you're making is so valuable in terms of not judging, not being critical, not being punitive with ourselves, and actually looking at the way we're wired to say, well, this is who we are, and this is therefore why this does work, doesn't work, or this does work. And that sort of sense of acceptance, but then working with how we are in order to get to the place that we want to get to. And it brings to mind some very strong parallels with the work that I do, and looking at someone's situation, personality, attitudes towards themselves and food and structure and risk, even flexibility, not having targets, all of those sorts of things, and saying, right, how can I present and inform you about this whole non-diet mindful eating approach that's really going to resonate with you? As you say, there are some people who want me to send guidance, you know, day one, and say, right, these are a few things that I would like you to work with. And others are quite happy to just tune into how they're thinking and just see what happens and just go with the flow. Mm. And if I suggested the opposite to the other, that would just be hopeless, and also wouldn't reflect very well on me, because it wouldn't give them anything, you know. Mm. So there's that element as well. So there's a there's a strong link here between what you're saying and how I try to make it bespoke, make the approach bespoke for people that I've got sat in front of me as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's why there's real value in taking the time to get to know somebody and really get to understand what makes them tick. I mean, I do have a shortcut in that I ask all my clients to take that quiz, the Gretchen Rubin Four Tendencies quiz, before I start working with them, so that I don't waste time suggesting things that I know are not going to work. But it really, one of the things that really gets my goat is when people, quite well-meaning people, will say, what's your top tip for productivity? How can I be more productive? Just off the cuff. And I kind of refuse to answer the question, because I don't want to fling suggestions and ideas out at somebody that might not work, because that's going to make them feel worse about themselves and think that I'm not very good at my job. So, and I think, you know, you're great at that as well, you know, building the relationship and the rapport with people so that you can tailor what you're doing to suit them and their style.
Absolutely. Thank you. So my third question is, what easy tips could you offer the listeners to improve their productivity? No. To improve their well-being, because this is all about this podcast, although it might be slightly tenuous at times, it is all about people getting more out of life and feeling better and improving their mental and physical well-being. So what do you say?
Yeah. And I'm very happy to answer this question, because I have an answer that I hope will help and apply to everyone regardless. And the tip really is just, it's the pause. Take a pause, slow down and pause. And I think we're living in a culture that is very fast paced. Our attention spans are shrinking. Everyone is just, you know, there's so much out there on social media about hustle mentality and all of that kind of stuff, that we feel we have to have our heads down and just keep going. And actually, that's really damaging. So the biggest tip I give to anyone is about pausing. So if you're unsure what to do, if you're feeling overwhelmed, if you catch yourself in a mindless scroll, step away and take a pause. Because in that pause, you get to then, you know, notice how you're feeling. Give yourself what you need. So notice how you're feeling, settle your nervous system in whatever way you need to. You might want to get out for a walk, meditate for a couple of minutes, stick some music on, have a dance, whatever you need to do. And then once you've settled yourself in that pause, you get to reflect and you get to make a choice before you move back into action.
Absolutely. And it brings to mind something that I talk to every client about. And that's the Viktor Frankl quote.
Yeah.
So Viktor Frankl, American psychologist. In fact, he was a Holocaust survivor. And I'm probably going to misquote him. But between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space, lies. No, our ability to think. And basically, it's like in that space, you have the opportunity. I normally have it written on my wall somewhere. Right. What is it? What does it think? Right. Between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space lies your choice, and in that choice lies your freedom, something like that.
There we go. Yeah.
So essentially, that if you give yourself the time to think, what am I feeling? Where is this thought coming from? So say it's an eating trigger, for example, that you're able then to say, okay, I am feeling frustrated. I'm feeling bored. This person has upset me, and I'm getting this driver to do something. In our case, mostly it would be to eat something. And actually, that's so that I'm distracted from this feeling rather than actually doing something that will really help me, which might be just to sit and to do nothing. I mean, it might be to eat, sometimes it is, but generally we don't want to have that as our go-to response, because then that creates other problems. But just that pause space slows everything down, because very often an eating response happens very quickly. So emotional eating is fast, and it's something that has to be done there and then, whereas hunger that comes from a physical place, you can have a little bit more time. It's not quite so immediate. And so by slowing it down, the response to an emotional eating trigger, emotional hunger, can actually be taken away completely.
Yeah. I think it applies across so many different parts of our lives. We're thinking about our well-being. Mm-hmm. I quite often talk about people getting stuck in this frantic and frazzled overwhelm loop, and it's very difficult to break yourself out of that sometimes. And you can't go from that loop into action. That's what's got you there in the first place. The only way out of that loop is to take the pause. Yes. So powerful.
Because otherwise it's just a repeating cycle, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. And
so you have to break it somehow.
Yeah. 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 You need to create a disruption. Nice healthy disruption of pausing.
I like the idea of dancing around the living room. Yeah.
Music, bit of music and a bit of a stretch and a move and a wiggle.
A wiggle. Are you wiggling, listener? Yes, I hope you're wiggling. Yes, fascinating. Yes, I've got so many thoughts in my head. I don't quite know what to say next. And how when you're working with people, do you also find that you are sort of reinforcing this with yourself as well? I mean, I know that it comes quite naturally to you, but I'm wondering if through this process you're also equipping yourself, and you're, learning things about yourself when you're working with other people that you maybe didn't realize or you forget from time to time. Or
what a great question. That is such a great question. I haven't been asked that before. It's a funny one, isn't it? Because it is so intrinsic in me. It's just naturally who I am to work in this way, in this kind of slow, steady, thoughtful, considered way. I don't know how else to do it. So in a way, if people ask me if I'm following my own advice, I know I have to admit I don't, because I don't kind of don't need to. But what I do get from the work that I do, and what people is what people reflect back to me about how the way that I am is helping them, which is something I wouldn't have got otherwise. People always, always, always use the word calm to describe me, which is not a word I would have come up with on my own. But there is something about this energy. I think I work really well with extroverts who are, with the butterfly farm in their head, who need a bit of this more grounded energy to help them land stuff. And there's something about that that works really nicely. I don't know if I'm answering your question here, Laurie, but it has helped me to discover stuff about myself and how I can bring my own natural gifts and tendencies to benefit other people. And that's been a really beautiful discovery, actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
And is it people from all different industries that you work with?
I'm really passionate about working with people who are making a positive difference in the world. So I want them to be doing something that is helping people in some way. They're usually service-based business owners, quite a lot of coaches, leadership coaches, that kind of thing. I don't tend to work with people who've got products, and I don't want to be working with people whose only motivation is money. Of course, we all want to be earning money, and I've had a journey with that as well. You know, the more money I have in my hands, the more good I can do with it. So I'm over my kind of money issues. But I want people to be driven by more than that, you know, the people that I'm working with.
So I'm now sitting here thinking, it's fine to have all the ideas. It's fine actually to not want to sit down and execute. And it's also, isn't it, part of that thing to say, what in, you know, why is someone like me, who with the best will in the world has to accept, is not a detailed person? I mean, I try so hard, honestly, I try really hard, but it is not natural to me. What is the point of me spending hours and hours and hours trying to do something like, I don't know, well, I'm in the process of uploading an online course that I wrote to a different platform. For me, it is so tedious. And I'm thinking, I'm probably taking twice as long as anyone else would, because I'm thing about and getting distracted because I've always got 20 windows open on my laptop because I can't do one thing at once ever. It's actually better, going back to your point about accepting what you're good at and what you're not good at, and that's okay. So just say, actually, do you know what? I'm going to give this to somebody to do for me.
Yeah.
But that's all right as well, isn't it? That's okay.
More than okay. That's amazing, because it's allowing someone else to do their thing and their thing that they're brilliant at. And it's allowing you more space to do the things you're brilliant at. Everybody's a winner. You're making a bigger impact.
Yes. Yeah,
100%.
Oh, wow. Well, I feel much better. And I hope anyone listening that isn't of the same type of butterfly as me, or equally someone who is more like you, Louise, who's thinking, actually, I'm really good at this stuff and it's not really valued where I am. I should put it in an environment where it is really, really valued, and I can take away the pain from these people who don't want to be in that space at all.
Oh, I love that you've said that, because I think back when I thinking back to what I was saying earlier about the journey I had to understanding the value of what I do, the admin person in the office is very rarely valued, but the whole place would fall apart without them there.
Oh, the glue. Yeah, the glue, for sure. Yes.
And that was definitely a journey for me. And it took me a while to realize that I was carrying that baggage with me of being just the admin, just the office person, when actually that is really, really valuable. So yes, absolutely.
What excellent food for thought. Amazing. Well, brilliant. Thank you, Louise. My head's going, and I think probably we stimulated quite a lot of thought about what productivity really is and our own personal measure of it. I think that's a really interesting adjustment for all of us to make, actually. I think that's really, really helpful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been fun.
It has been fun. And I'm going to put lots of details, lovely, lovely details about you. I'm going to find that Frankl quote. I'm so sorry. Could not remember it word for word. I'm going to find it and I'm going to put it in the blurb. And also I'll put Gretchen Rubin's name down in case anybody wants to look into her anymore. And of course, also, if anyone wants to get in touch with you and is thinking, I need this genie. I absolutely need this genie in my life. And that'd be great. Yeah.
Yeah, I would love that. Come connect with me on LinkedIn is the best place. That's where I hang out.
Yeah. Lots of us hang out there, don't we?
We do.
We do. Oh, wonderful. Louise, thank you so much for your time on the podcast. It was an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks, Laurie.
Well, there we are. Another Mindful Meets, stimulating your mind. And hopefully food for thought, as I said. So lots more meets to listen to. And I know I haven't done a mindful moment for a while, so I'm going to pop out a few of those. And they are just short topics, happen to come into my head. It's another one of those butterflies, you see. There is no plan. I'm sorry, but there just isn't. It's just one of those spontaneous moments that I like to share with you. Thank you very much for listening. Have a really, really great day. And I'll see you again soon.